Okay, can we get started? All right, we're going to start the Land Use Committee meeting Tuesday, October 2nd. We're running a little late because we moved down here in the first floor. So we have in attendance, we have Billy Bell, Councilman Weiner, Councilman Cartier, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Powers, Councilwoman Deller, Co-Chair Tackett, Councilman Penrose Hollins, and Councilman Street, and myself, Joe Retta, and my aide, Chrissy Roberts. Not attending right now is Councilman Smiley. He's at another meeting, and I believe Council President will be coming late. What's your pleasure on the minutes?
Be accepted as printed.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
Yes. I'd like to move that we suspend the rules and hear ordinance number 12007 at this time because of a time constraint and replace it with 12136. So we basically are taking the last to the first and the first to the last.
Okay. What's your pleasure, Council?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I believe, Mr. Tarabico, you're up.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of Council. Larry Tarabicos on behalf of Limestone Crossing. Limestone Crossing is a LLC, and its members are members of the Wittig family, Robert Wittig, Fred Wittig, and a couple of others as well. This is a fairly simple and straightforward rezoning. I put a couple of plans in front of you, the site plan, which is to your left, and a rendering of the proposed building, which is to your right. This is the last piece, which I will show you on the other plan I have here, which now that we're in a workshop setting, it's going to be more difficult to see, but this is the last piece, hole in the donut, if you will, of a number of development projects that have taken place in this area over recent years. The most recent one was in the last couple of years, adjacent next door, and it's shown on this plan. So if you see the two brown buildings on the left, those are the buildings that have already been approved. The Wisfis Bank's already been constructed. This was the Midori property, which actually wraps around to the back of this property. This property is just 1 acre. It's one building of 6,800 square feet, so 6,800 square feet of retail space. On the other side of this property is the Community News Building. And there's a string of rezonings that have taken place along that side of Limestone Road, which is directly across from Lantana Square Shopping Center. And each one has sort of filled a particular need and followed the same routine in terms of architectural design of the buildings, the appearance of the buildings. And now we also have, we've developed a joint access, which I'll talk about. This property has been used for commercial uses for probably 30-some years. It's had numerous Board of Adjustment variances authorizing commercial uses over the years. Most recently, it was a hair salon and a day spa. And we're just now rezoning it to conform to the proposed use. One of the things that you'll notice, this site used to have, believe it or not, three independent points of access to Route 7. We're actually going to eliminate all of those, and we're now going to have joint access combined with the community news building, this property, and the Midori property. I didn't expect to be here, so I didn't bring my laser pointer, so I can't point it to you. But if you look, there's a new signalized entrance now at the intersection of Lantana Drive. There we go. There's my laser pointer. This is a new signalized entrance to Lantana Square. It will give, so if you're headed northbound on Route 7, you'll be able to enter here, and this will give you access to all three of the properties, and the third property being the community news isn't on the site. If you're coming southbound on Route 7, you'll be able to enter at that point in the community news property and then access all three properties as well, or, of course, you can use the signalized entrance. So that's why the major benefit of this plan is that we've now linked all three properties together. Everything, and I know you can't see this, but this is the site. The blue is Lantana Square, Tim's Liquors, Walgreens. We have Hokesson Athletic Club. And then the what we have on the corner here is rezoning that we handled a number of years ago, the old Sanini Mushroom Farms, which is now Valley Point Townhomes, is at the intersection. Next to that is the community news building. We have the Midori, Wisfis, and office building here. Now, this little site is the subject of this rezoning now. So this will be the end. There are no other pieces to be developed at that entire quadrant there. So this will be the last piece that you see here. As in the past, on every one of these projects, we worked very closely with GATA, and we've entered into a set of deed restrictions with them that pretty much mirror the deed restrictions that were done for community news and the Midori property while dealing with uses, lighting, signage. There's a number of items that are addressed in there. So with that, I'll answer any questions that you have. I think I've covered everything that I intended to. Councilor Powers?
Just looking at this and knowing the property, the stormwater, where is it going? Under the parking lot?
Yeah, it's subsurface.
So, but it'll be underneath.
Yeah.
Recharged underneath.
Yes. Would you?
It was a pretty good slope.
Yes, very, very much so. Yeah. And I guess one of the things I didn't point out is, of the two properties, 70% of the two properties will be open space. It's actually 71%, right? 71% of the two now commercially zoned properties will remain open. So very little of the properties being developed. That's partly by design, partly because of the Cockeysville drainage formation.
Councilor Powers, you okay?
Yeah.
Councilwoman?
Thank you. I just want to say on behalf of the community that this was vetted very well through the public process, through GATA, as well as Hokesson Hunt being behind them, because the backs of these properties back up to some of the residential properties, there was discussion and the screening, different plantings was discussed, and the developer has agreed, and in some cases it's already in from, I think, the Wisfis.
Yes.
So I don't believe that there's anybody from GATA here this afternoon nor from the community, but this is not a contentious rezoning at all. It's all worked very well through the community.
It does look like Mr. Blake did make it here, so. Didn't see him before, but looks like he made it in, so.
Anything else from council? Anything from the public? Yep. Go ahead.
Mark Blake from past president of GATA and president of Hokesson Hunt Maintenance Corp. As Mr. Terabikos and Councilwoman Kilpatrick noted, the community did vet this quite extensively. I live in that neighborhood right behind this. I'm literally two houses away. And this is a project that really shows what happens when you get the community involved in an early portion of the planning. Instead of being 60% impervious, open, non-pervious, we ended up with 71%, more than what we were looking for. And this is great because of all the issues with the Cockeysville formation. The drainage issues were vetted completely before. There was DelDOT was involved. They improved their passageways under limestone through Lantana. This was truly a collaborative effort, and it's one that the community unanimously supported. There was not a single voice of opposition to this from the design phase. And as Mr. Terabikas pointed out, we've actually improved the intersection and traffic. We've had no accidents since the signalization went in. Went from 5 entrances, we're going down to 2 once this is done, and it should only get better. And it will make it actually more easier to transit the various lots as they're connected. All the businesses have been looked at. The same deed restrictions are in place. This is actually a very good plan and ends up providing a nice, well-rounded mini development. Ironically, this had probably less issues than some of the other ones, but had more stringent safeguards looked at. So I want to say from the standpoint as the past president of GATA that they fully endorse this, and as the president of Hokesson Hunt, we fully endorse it. And those nearest neighbors directly behind it were very supportive of this, because most of that area on the top of the hill where there was a problem property, that property and building has been eliminated, and it's been returned to forestation, which is rather nice, and all the landscaping has been maximized. So thank you, and we would urge you to vote for this rezoning. It meets all the requirements from the standpoint of good development and good communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else from the public? Okay. I'd just like to say that we see Mike Ramon has joined us, and I did see registered Will Sarah Poppity. I don't know if he's still here or not. He leave? Okay. Thank you, Ruby. Okay. Right? I thought you wanted to say something else. Okay. Go to the next order of business. We have resolution 12-122, and it's Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Powers. It has to do with it's tabled. So
it stands tabled, Mr.
Stay
Chair.
Tabled?
Yes.
Okay. Next we have High Point of St. George's. They have Red Lion 100. Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have with us today counsel for the applicant to make a presentation before counsel, and then I'll make comment after the presentation is made. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, sir, members of counsel, John Tracy from Young, Conway, Stargett & Taylor here on behalf of the applicant. This is Mr. Madden to my left with Eastern States Engineering is bringing the plans up. Like Mr. Terabikos, we were not aware we were going to end up in this room, so doubling as Vanna White is Jeff Madden. This project is a standard subdivision open space plan with two unit types, all single family homes. It's located in between Route 13 and Route 1, bordered to the south by Kirkwood St. George's Road and part of the subdivision of Antrim, bordered to the north by the Dragon Run, and then the subdivision of Northern View. Barb's Farm in St. George's Heights is across the street. It is 175 units on approximately 123 acres of land. There are two parcels that will ultimately be retained by the owner of the property, the Lester family. There's a farm parcel located right off of 13 that's roughly 20 acres. That's going to be retained by the current owners. Across Route 1 is another 22-acre piece. We actually used some TDRs from that piece to transfer development into this property. 16 of the 26 TDRs that were generated by that property, the owner is retaining the rest. There is roughly 50 acres of open space, including a pool and community center at the property. It's public sewer and public water. As I know Mr. Weiner usually asks, this is not an ST zoning, so it's not transit specific. However, there is a park and ride facility approximately a half a mile to the north at the intersection of Wrangell Hill Road and Route 13. It's actually a big Delaware Transit Center. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just want to make comment in reviewing this plan and following it through the process within the district. It's a very good plan. We have not received any adverse comment from any of the adjoining properties or neighborhoods. I think it's one that when you look at, it certainly has infrastructure in place already, but there's plans for an increase in infrastructure as time goes on. When you think about what's been presented, it's kind of interesting because you're utilizing some space to continue to be zoned as agriculture, and you have some transfer development rights, and you end up really with a significant amount of open space and a very well-planned community. So if anyone has any questions of either council or the district, I'd be more than glad to answer them.
Anything from council? Councilor Powers.
The entrance off of 13. Where exactly is it?
It's you're heading north. It's just past, correct me if I'm wrong, the Coxnex Road interchange.
Does it line up with that?
It does not.
And that's coming up that hill.
Yeah, it was. That was when they reviewed the entrance plans. That was the logical location, in part because of the large parcel that's being retained by the current owners.
Now, would that be a right in, right out?
No, it's fully. It's a full access with an acceleration lane heading northbound.
But it's pretty close to Cox Neck Road.
What's the distance to you? It's about 200 feet. It couldn't align properly due to the configuration of the farm property.
Okay.
There's an entrance on the other road, too.
There's an entrance on Kirk St. George's as well. And we're actually making a large culvert replacement over there to solve some existing flooding problems unrelated to this property.
I mean, just knowing going up that hill, will they be taking some of that off?
Some of what off?
I guess the hill, so there's enough to see.
The DLDOT, in its comment letter, provided a normal distance they would like to see for acceleration, deceleration lanes, but they said because of the hill and the way this property is situated, it didn't quite need as much because there's a downhill where you're accelerating. But there is, when people make the left, they'll come out of the development and they'll come into a feeder lane that then merges into the northbound lane. Yeah.
Councilman Weiner.
Yes. I wanted to ask about bike ped enhancements both externally and within the proposed subdivision.
There's sidewalks throughout the subdivision. There's no interconnection because, as you can see, we're bordered on three sides by roads and the fourth side by the Dragon Run. There's no sidewalk situation planned for Route 13 in that area. However, we had to put tie-ins to our sidewalks in case at some point DLDOT wanted to come through and do something there. But there's nothing, and I'm going visually now. I don't recall anything up where Northern View, which is the next subdivision up.
And the style of housing is
similar to Red Lion Chase, which is across Route 1 from this project. It's intended to be a Toll Brothers project, so it would be that type of design.
They're a single-family residential?
Correct. Single-family residential on 10,000 and over 12,500 square foot lots.
So they're large homes?
Yeah, larger, I guess, not the old half-acre lots.
And my constituents at High Point Dairies have complained about the name that you're using.
Have or have not?
They have not.
That's nice to know.
Yes, okay. Great. Thanks.
As we represent Mr. Meany.
We have Council President Kovac just attended. Councilor Powers?
Yeah, I was just going to say with the bike path, there's a real big bike path going over the bridge.
There is. As long as you're not worried about the concrete falling out from underneath you as you're riding the bike.
I know there's a big side on the side of that, and if you come down, there is a bike path.
Yeah, they reduced it from a four-lane bridge to a two-lane bridge.
Yeah, but I'm saying even cutting across on the St. George's side.
Anything else from council? All right, anything from the public on this subject? Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, we have resolution to amend the Claymont Community Redevelopment. Councilman Cartier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of council. You have a series of documents before you, and I'm going to have the applicant come up and present as well. I'm just going to make some brief overview introductory remarks. What you have before you is the request for by resolution for modifications to the Brookview Design Guidelines. These are master planning documents that council adopted to guide the development of the really first truly transit-oriented development project on the redeveloping on the site of the former Brookview apartment complex, which is now called Darley Green. Got a little bit of it, you know, history here. Darley Green was sold out of foreclosure to a new ownership back in June, and in the course of that transfer of ownership, the new owners requested meetings with myself and other important community stakeholders in Claymont to, you know, review this proposed block of development that they wanted to bring forward. And this revision to the design standards only applies to block A1, B1, D, and E1. And in a nutshell, the initial design, which was developed by a famous new urbanist design firm, Tortugalis, called for the construction of large-scale parking structures, two of them on the site, to accommodate all the parking needs of this very dense, transit-oriented development that was intended to be very pedestrian-friendly. And in the course of them looking at the project that they acquired, found that the construction of the parking structures to be prohibitive, and so they brought forward a revision to allow them to carry forward the spirit of this design concept in a revised form that would hopefully be acceptable to members of the community and Newcastle County Council. One of the things I want members of council to be aware of, this design revision has been fully vetted by the Claymont Design Review Advisory Committee, which supervises all land use or issues advisory opinions on all land use proposals in the hometown overlay zone in Claymont. Claymont was one of the first hometown overlay zones, and it remains one of the most vibrant ones in the county. They were able to look this over and approved these design revisions. Essentially what you're looking at, if you look on the first page of site plan that describes these blocks, we have the mixed-use buildings along the Philadelphia Pike, commercial, residential, with the apartment blocks behind. And the what you're really looking at here, this area was always going to be developed according to the master plan or the manual design guidelines according to this concept. But what we're proposing here is to reduce the scale and the intensity of the development because of the lack of the parking structures that will not be built. The parking rationale flows at about 1.7 cars per unit. And along the commercial area on the Philadelphia Pike, that's four per commercial unit, four parking spaces. So with that logic, we were able to accommodate a certain amount of building. The units along the Philadelphia Pike are the mixed use. You go interior to the project, you have the apartment blocks that are four-story. Then you have additional apartment blocks that are three-story with internalized parking. All of this will have, you know, bordering fencing to kind of buffer the parking. You'll have a complete set of sidewalks. There's a 1 1/3 acre parcel in the center that we'll revisit later for public use. But what I'm going to do is close my remarks and ask the applicant to come up and review for you in greater detail the type of modifications that they're requesting from council with this resolution. So, floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, Councilman Cartier. For the record, my name is Bill Rodunda. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the Capanna organization, who did take title to the entire property very recently. Also here with me this evening is Christopher Noland. He's a consultant with the Capanna organization who's actually been studying the feasibility of constructing the apartments at Dolly Green for over 2.5 years. Also with us this afternoon is Gary Seward from Architectural Alliance. They prepared architectural plans and renderings that you're about to see. Quite frankly, I'll be very brief because Councilman Cartier really gave you the essence of why we're here. The concept that the Capanna organization has been looking at for over 2 years related to the apartments was to actually be able to construct a project that worked from economic and practical point of view. As Councilman Cartier pointed out, the original Dolly Green plan called for 6-story parking garages, donut hole apartments on the upper blocks shown on the plan in front of you. Not only is that very cost prohibitive, but it also didn't work from the point of view of convenience to all the other square footage for apartments and commercial uses within this portion of Dolly Green. I can tell you that this concept has been studied very carefully. There have been many renderings, many renditions of a plan that would work from a practical point of view, which is largely associated with parking access issues. As Councilman Cartier pointed out, the process has included many meetings with community leaders, residents, land use department, and of course, before we came to council, we were required to go to DRAC and get DRAC's approval. That's the Claymont Design Review Advisory Committee. And after several meetings with DRAC, at their public meetings, at the last meeting, they voted to approve the suggested plan that we're bringing before council for approval. So at this point, in light of the great presentation given by Councilman Cartier, I don't want to reiterate all the things that he just said. What I'd like to do at this time is bring Christopher Noland forward and have him walk through the site plan and walk through the concepts that are basically set forth within the resolution that you will be considering. Because in essence, the resolution goes into some great detail regarding what the changes are, but without seeing them by way of a rendering, it's hard to put the pictures together, I mean, unless you actually see them. Applying the words without pictures is pretty useless. As those of you recall who were here in 2006 when the guidelines were passed, it's a very comprehensive set of guidelines that are being amended. But in amending them, the concept and the theme that was desired by the county and the community remain the same. So I'll, Christopher, go ahead and run through the renderings with you to show what the resolution and all those written comments refer to that you were presented with in your package before today's meeting.
So I'm going to make a comment that Bill hasn't made. This is my van of light. Thank you, Bill.
So, okay, excuse me. Could you just state your name for the record, please?
Christopher Noland. So the process with the community started by identifying what they wanted. And so the pictures you're going to see are really what we're committing to do. And then the design guidelines were changed to reflect the pictures, the buildings that we all agreed to. So that's why there's a new resolution, because we're not... We've taken it from the approach of what does the community want, and from that we've developed design guidelines. So, Gary, you want to? Okay, so we have along the bottom here. This is what faces Philadelphia Pike. So the concept was to provide buildings on Philadelphia Pike that actually almost mirror what the original design guidelines are. So. The community had spent a lot of time on creating those design guidelines, and we were able to achieve what they wanted on those first four buildings. Let's go to the next picture, Gary. So this is a close-up. There were tower elements required. There's a tower element here, and there's a mirror of that building on the other side of Manor Avenue. First floor is retail. Second floor is apartments. Gary. There are two buildings that are east of the main entrance is in two buildings, first floor retail, second floor apartment. Okay. As we turn into Manor Avenue, this is the side view of the buildings with the tower elements. And as the councilman referred to, there was a lot of interest in screening the parking lot. So as you turn into Manor Avenue along all this parking back here is screened by a brick wall and an fence above it. Okay. So as we drive up Manor Avenue, we come to the end of these two buildings here, which are four-story, elevator-served, interior hallway parking buildings. And the facade you see would be called a primary facade. This is a primary facade, so there's a lot of brick and architecturally interesting finishes. And this is the front of the building. Now, the building articulates, it goes up and makes a 45-degree angle and turns again. And you can't show that in a flat, two-dimensional picture, but this is the Manor Avenue face, and then this is the corner that turns, which is right here. So from the four-story buildings, we turn around the park and we run into the three-story buildings. And the reason there's different sizes of buildings is originally there was a six-story parking garage here, which provided the parking for what was supposed to be retail here. And this is the concept that the councilman is speaking about. It's very difficult for retailers to survive when their customers have to park here, drive up three or four stories, come down, and walk back to get their shirts and things. So it just wasn't a viable concept. And the reason we're down to three-story apartments is because there's very little parking available in these areas. So it's a mathematical formula, basically. You see how much square footage you have on the ground, and then you have to have enough parking to support the apartments. So these are now three-story apartments at the end of this building. Okay. And then this is the face that we faced the park. And there are a lot of compromises. Our original design would have been something you'd see in a standard suburban sort of location. And because of the design guidelines and the desire of the community, we've really changed things from what we normally build. So each of these units actually has street access with a door that has a knob and opens and shuts so people can park along Manor Avenue on either side and enter their units, the folks that are oriented this direction. So it's really something new for Delaware, new for Newcastle County, and a huge step up from everything else that we think's been built in Newcastle County. So we'll be proud of it. We hope they are too. We're done?
All right, one more.
Okay. Oh, and then there's additional fencing that goes around any areas where there aren't buildings on these blocks, D and E1.
Councilor Cartier.
Yes, if you could keep that plan up there using the laser pointer. I just want to talk about the pedestrian amenities that are available. Along the Philadelphia Pike, the commercial buildings will have 25-foot-wide cafe-style sidewalks where we hope to accommodate a good deal of street life and outdoor seating that will make it, a pretty vibrant place. And then when you proceed off of the Philadelphia Pike, you have Manor Avenue extended, and this completes a block. Manor Avenue was on the other side of Philadelphia Pike. By having Manor Avenue extended, we complete a block and we create an intersection. People can walk off of the commercial district back to their units and again take advantage of local retail amenities. And it encourages, with the access off the buildings into the center of the Manor Avenue and the parkland, it encourages people to go out on the street and enjoy walking and recreating in the community where they live. So we've done everything possible to ensure we maintain a pedestrian-friendly concept here with very actually profoundly dense development and make it a viable, sustainable, vibrant community for the future.
Councilor Weiner.
Thank you. I'd like to take a few minutes to express my support for this project. I want to thank the Land Use Department for its leadership, for the PANA organization for carrying forth a vision which the community has championed for two decades. Councilman Cartier, his leadership in this project is very clear. I know he, like I, is dedicated to new urbanism, the smart growth plan, this pedestrian-friendly plan. And I started with this project in 1996 as the councilman of the district, handed it over to Councilman Cartier in 2002, and both the business and civic community are united in wanting not to replicate simply more suburbia, but to take advantage of the opportunities for transit, both train, bus, pedestrian, bicycle, and to create a new urbanist village. And as we learn in new urbanism, times change, and therefore the modification to remove the multi-level parking lot makes sense with the times, given the current economic vicissitudes. Having said that, I concur with the description by Mr. Nolan that this does emulate the original manual design guidelines first designed by Thomas Committed Associates and then carried forth to its final stage by Tortugalis, working with our fine land use department. I'm pleased that this really provides an opportunity for people to live, shop, work, and play without being hostage to a single occupancy vehicle. And I'm hoping as time passes in the decades to come that we'll revisit this model, have an opportunity to add more commercial as we get the critical density of a residential that would support that commercial and office. As we know, these things take a life of their own, and that's what the these new urbanist villages do under the guidelines of the county, and that is to let the private sector meet the demands of the market without necessarily going through a World War III of rezoning. Thank you.
Council President?
Thank you. I just wanted to echo the comments of the other local councilmen. Know lots of people in the area were very interested in the continued development at the site. And we're very concerned because of the changes in the economic situation that would clearly not allow the original plans. And for somebody to step forward and make sure that we're going to be continuing to positively develop this area, very important to the people of the Claymont community. It's very warmly received. And I know Councilman Cartier has been on top of the Philadelphia Pike road work as well that's planned for that area. And that should really add to the street access and add to the pedestrian-friendly nature of that facility. And I just, you know, I'm appreciative of the fact that this hasn't gone away, obviously needed to change, but moving forward in a very positive manner. So I know all the residents in the area are very thankful for that.
Councilor Cartier?
One last remark. This phase of the project will begin to close in and develop along the Philadelphia Pike, which currently... just to give a perspective, Brookview, former Brookview site is close to 70 acres. You know, for Brandywine 100, it's quite a lot of land. All of the old apartments were torn down, so residents have looked at, you know, basically dirt fields now for quite some time. Now we're very excited that we're going to be able, in partnership with this development group, come forward with a plan on the Philadelphia Pike to realize the commercial district with the apartment blocks behind to provide a frontage along the prominent Philadelphia Pike artery for Darley Green so that, you know, it becomes a real thing for folks and something that brings progress. We have currently development along Darley Road, but this side of the project really needs, you know, progress, and I'm really glad to have this opportunity to vote for this at our next meeting and make it go forward.
Thank you. I'd like to ask a couple questions. I know Councilman Cartier had his finger on the pulse here since it started this project, and it's been taken over. The other thing is, since it's been taken over, is there any change in the original design to what it was compared to now?
In terms of the types of units?
Yes.
There are a number of conceived types of units that are permitted under the original guidelines, and the first blocks that have been developed have approximately 100 units sold over the years. Essentially, they're townhouses, and there are some paths within those spaces for condo-type buildings. So it's pretty much kept a form, except there's one block, E2, on the screen in front of you. That, I believe, was an apartment block that was converted into townhouses. The number of apartment units goes down to 290 with this plan. Original design guidelines didn't have a fixed number of apartments, but had somewhere upwards of, you know, 400-plus permitted. It ranged on the block. So we'll have less apartments than originally permitted and probably more townhouses.
With that, I know there's a couple council people here that feel the same way I do, and it's about safety, fire safety. You're having some buildings on Philadelphia Pike that are going to be retail on the bottom and apartments on top. What type of safety are you having for the people to live up top? If there's a fire or something down below, or there's some type of accident, how are the people upstairs going to be able to, if they're there, how are they going to be able to get out, and how's the safety going to be on them?
And this is something we have to deal with no matter whether it's in Claymont or any place in DeKalb County or the second floor units are separated from the first floor. There's probably a two-hour fire rating around the hallways for exit and between the two floors. So it would be the same as we would do any place else in the county. So these are two stories with their own individual hallways to take them outside.
Yeah, I know the two council, in a minute.
And sprinklers.
Pardon?
And sprinklers as well.
They're going to have them?
Yes.
Good.
That's what I was going to allude to. That's what I was going to say. Commercial would have to have.
Right. Right. That was my next question.
And that was mine, too, is commercial would have to have sprinklers anyway.
Councilor Cartier?
Good point. Fire safety, in dense development, fire safety is very critical, especially in dense development, and probably so. Darley Green, the townhouses, to my knowledge, are the first ones in the county to actually employ sprinklers throughout the development so far.
And there's a couple people in the county here that are working on it also about the a single line going into the houses instead of what they have up there originally. All right, that's all I have. Anything else from council? Anything from the public on this subject? Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have ordinance 12090. That's myself and Councilwoman Kilpatrick, and I believe we concur that we're going to leave it tabled. Okay, we'll go back to the top of the page. I believe that's why most of the people are here. Resolution 12136. Councilman Sheldon, Councilwoman Kilpatrick. Who wants to take it?
Yes, it's me.
Okay.
Janet's already yelled at me for about an hour, so I have in the phone. I'm about drained from her anyway, so I'll just take it over. She's taking a lot out. First of all, I want to say I'm sorry that I wasn't here last week with all the commotion. I think Janet put it on the record, which I appreciate. When I scheduled I'm going to just say a vacation, so to say, over to Tuscany. We've never before had the Jewish holidays before, so I looked. I've never missed a council meeting ever. I missed my first one.
Rub it in. Where you went.
And even as I and Council President Tom Kovac had a debate, I thought that was going to be my first one, but Snow canceled it, so I never got to miss a meeting until this. Anyway, I see all the fireworks that happened last time. I listened to some of the audio that went on. The meeting apparently went a little bit over 2 hours. So I just want to get right into it. I'm not going to speak no more than 15, 20 minutes tops. I mean, everybody else can talk about it. I want to make it known right before we even start, I have nothing against hospice. When I started this back in early 2009, I went to Pike Creek Civic Association and told them about the 52,000 square foot plan that's being presented, and I said, I'm voting for this. let them know that it's either this or a church. Most likely 99% of the time, I'm voting yes. But then things change. The building got bigger. Now it's gotten smaller. We've heard all this last week. I'm not going to bore you. But I guess I want to ask, I got some questions that I want to ask. So I guess if the applicant can come forward, and then if somebody from land use, I don't care who, would be able to answer some questions from the council side, and maybe even our own attorney or some attorney might want to step forward too.
Hello, Councilman Shelton.
Hi, Kim Zarrera. Great to see you outside
of court.
Good to see
you, too. Welcome back to Maryland. For the record, Kim Hoffman.
Yeah. Question number one. This is 24 beds, almost 60,000. We'll just round it. It's 59,978. If you don't mind, we'll just, for figure's sake, we'll just say 60.
Okay,
does hospice plan to conduct or run an outpatient care facility from this suburban zone facility?
No.
Okay. And these are some yes or no answers. So it's not. You're saying it's not. Would you be willing to enter a note on this plan to this effect?
There already is a note on the plan to that effect, Councilman. Yes, the plan purpose note. If you want to refer to, let me see what tab it is. Do you have the plan, Councilman?
Yes, I do. I'm looking at it.
So if you look at the plan purpose note, which is on the far right of your plan, on the first page, let me read it into the record.
Okay, yes.
The purposes of this plan are to subdivide the existing parcel into two lots, and I'll explain about that in a second, to provide for the construction of a single-story, 24-bed, 59,878 GSF inpatient hospice facility on Lot 1 and to create a shared parking agreement, between Lot 1 and tax parcel 08048.00-072.
Okay, then. So, very good. So, the note is on the plan. You're saying it's effective that you will not be running any outpatient care. That's what you're saying on this. That's what that note says.
That's correct.
Okay. And I'm going to ask the same thing for my counsel when they come up to speak, so just for them to get that answer. Okay, so I'm looking for answers from both land use and the law department in light of the zoning category. You know, there was a court decision and a settlement agreement that does not address the specific issue is the problem that I have, because if you look on the plan itself, there's 50,000, on phase one, reflects 50,738 square foot for 16 beds. There's the no nine denying that. That's there. That's 3,171 square foot per bid. But this is what bothers me. Phase two reflects only 9,240 square foot for 8 bids, which equals to the math about 1,155 per bid. Why is there a difference at the same location that we have here between phase one and phase two in the bed size square footage?
Well, I'm not sure I fully understand your question, but the phasing of the plan is really designed to address the fact that since hospice is a nonprofit, we actually have to go out and raise money to build this facility. So we can't raise all the money all at once, so we split it into two phases. So we build part of it, and then we build another part of it.
And I understand that. I think maybe get my question better. The first phase is 3,171 square foot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The second phase, whether you get the money or not, has been designed for only 1,155, which is less. That's like 33% less. My question is why is it per square foot so much smaller phase two than phase one? And if you don't have the answer, I want to make this perfectly clear, just for the audience and everything, you can come back because I want to see this in writing also. Because believe me, I want to vote yes for this. I really do. I swear to God. But I have to look at myself in the morning. And whether I'm here or not after November 6th, I really have to look at this. It's only a half a mile from my house. and I'm appreciative of that, and I'm appreciative of hospice. But these are some red flags that come up, and I say, well, why is this happening? Because when you build a house or in another place and you have some stabilization of the beds, you have your kitchens, you have your HVAC, you know, you have your mechanicals, I'm trying to say to you. But most of them reflect the same thing. Like the second floor on top of the first floor, the bedrooms might be a little different, but the square footage has got to be close to the same. Nobody builds unless you have a master bedroom, which is always bigger, but your other bedrooms are close in size. These are like 300% bigger.
Well, Councilman, maybe one thing that would help you was a handout that was given at the last committee meeting, and I'll just ask Mr. Charma to hand this over to you. And what it explains is what the bed ratio in this particular facility is versus what it is in other nursing homes. And as you can see there, it shows at the bottom, you know, before and after in terms of the new plan and the old plan. I think I might have just tossed you the only one I have. But anyway, the point is that we're well within the parameters of other residentially zoned institutional type 2 facilities as far as the overall ratio of beds to the rest of the space in the facility goes. So the point is that what the plan allows us to build and what our build-out plan is really no different than other institutional Type 2 facilities that have been previously approved in the county before. And, you know, the fact that it's a phased project really doesn't change the end result, which is that's really what the overall approval is. So those ratios are so low, and the gross square footage per bed since I think the last plan that you reviewed is 25% less. So that square footage has come down 25% since the last plan that was reviewed. And I think that in previous meetings and also in the last committee, one thing we talked about was how the care of the dying is a little bit different than the care of other people. For example, people who are just rehabilitating their knee. As the materials that we handed around show, we have much bigger rooms. We have very large hallways because, for example, when the matriarch of a family dies, there might be a lot of people who want to be there at that time. So we try to provide to make sure that that can be accommodated and that a lot of people are there 24/7. So, again, you know, we're just trying to provide the space that's necessary for those people to be accommodated.
Okay. Thank you. Because it's so interesting, you have to admit you are on the high end on some of these comparisons.
Not anymore when you look at that chart, Councilman.
Well, then I wanted to go back to what land use, what they considered auxiliary. And, of course, I looked it up in the dictionary, and auxiliary means giving support. It's held in reserve, secondary to something larger. That's the Bing's Dictionary of Auxiliary. You know, the other one from Free Dictionary, auxiliary is an objective that means giving assistance or support, helping, acting as a supplementary to the main use that's being held in reserve. The thing that I just have to get off my mind, and I can't, is land use looked, when I asked the question to them, the different parcels, what they were looking at to decide what is really, only they can speak on it, the square footage, and how did you decide on auxiliary, you know, uses? And Brandywine Nursing Home, 277, Spectral Care for Children is close to 3, Ford Manor is close to 3,100. Then St. Francis Care was 364. I mean, it varied so much between the top and the bottom that really we can't say what's auxiliary or not. And that's my bigger, major problem, is because if you looked at the 24 bids and you use the second calculation of phase two of 1,155, you only come up with 21,000 square foot. And 21,080 square feet. That leaves approximately 38,890 feet on phase one for all the beds. See, that you could just see my concern on that. That I don't want to ignore a word, and I don't mean this to be crucial or harsh or anything, because I take the word gentleman to heart. I really do. The older you get, you really know what a gentleman is, and I am that, so I won't raise my voice at all. But you can see where 38,000 feet just goes off my mind and say, well, why do they need that much if they're not running anything out of the, it's just inpatient? Because I guess you need it for billing. I listened to the tapes and everything. You need it for billing and so forth. My day job, as I call it, I collect over $75 million a year. And I have 1,000 square foot with four people. I don't know if you collect $75 million. And I guess my point is, if I don't need it, is there overkill, or is there something else that's going on here that we don't know about?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I would really encourage you to do, because I think it's often easier to deal with these kind of issues visually than it is to sort of look at a flat piece of paper, is walk through the Milford facility, because...
I worked on it.
It's an exact replica. Well, have you been there since it was up and operational?
Not since it's been operational, but I worked on that building. People ask me, oh, you haven't been down there. Oh, I worked on it. The tile down there, the terrazzo, everything on there that my local union did.
So operationally, this building is going to be very similar to that building. And if I took you from room to room, what I could show you are the things that aren't going to be in this building. For example, we have agreed to take our home care operation completely out of this building. So that was originally slated to be 5.6% of the overall square footage here. And that, so I would basically, in Milford, I would show you the home care area. It's actually not that big. It's okay. A little bit bigger than
the company. But that's only 35,000 square foot, the entire project. We're
so
60 here.
What I would have to do is take you through the entire thing and say, see this hallway? This hallway is going to be 5 feet wider. See this cafeteria? Our experience in Milford was this needs to be a little bigger. Our medical record storage here, we ran out of room within 1 year. So we decided when we were going to build this facility, we were going to make it a little bit bigger. And I'd be glad to take you room by room and show you what it is that's not going to be in this facility and then what it is that we've expanded and why. And keep in mind, the entire attic area, which spans the entire building, counts as gross floor area but is not usable square footage. We have HVAC up there because each individual room has its own separate HVAC unit because, you know, people who are very sick get hot, they get cold. We wanted everybody to have their own thing. So, I mean, we are glad to help you visualize that in any way that would be helpful to you, but I just want to remind you, what's before council tonight, or not, well, it's actually not before council tonight, what is going to be before council is actually not that operational detail. That's going to come at a later stage in the proceeding when we turn in a building permit application that's going to have full architecturals with it.
So that's where you answered another question. So that's why I've asked for architecturals. They're not written.
Right, because we lopped off the entire second story of the building and then removed our entire grief and loss center. So we had to send the architects completely back to the drawing board to do a redesign of all of this internal space.
Okay. When I listened to the tapes of last week, Mr. Charma made a comment towards the end of it, almost at the very end, so that they were going to close the Silverside Road is what was said, and then nothing else was answered. So I couldn't get, you know, not being there, I couldn't get the full effect of facial inspections and what was said afterwards, because our intentions always was to shut the 20,000 square foot Silverside Road headquarters. Is it the plan to relocate the 20,000 square foot Silverside Road headquarters to this facility?
No.
It is not. Okay. If not, are you willing to enter a note on the plan to this effect also?
Well, I mean, we've already agreed to move our home care operation somewhere else.
We went the Barley Mill route, and though you don't have to do this, we can't do this, and I hate to bring up Barley Mill, but they did agree to put the notes on the plan in case there's something 5 years down the road or something that happens. It's there. It's on the plan. You're familiar with the notes on the plan, I know, from our last time in court, that it really means effect. So I'm just kind of asking if you or the applicant, since we are good neighbors and we want to be good neighbors, if they'd be willing to do that.
Well, let's have a little chat about our federal compliance obligations so we can kind of, you know, get at what your concern is and, you know, see what we're both talking about here. So most of what goes on at Silverside right now is our so-called home care operation. But the truth is that what most of the home care people actually do is they do pre-admission planning and they do post-discharge planning. So this just happened to have been in the paper the other day. And if you switch over to the Medicare article, what it's talking about is how much trouble these facilities are getting in now for not doing a sufficient amount of post-discharge planning. And what that means is really figuring out what's going to happen to the patients after they're discharged from a facility. So in the case of our home care people, a lot of what they are ever at a facility to do, and of course currently it would be something like Christiana Care or it might be our Milford facility, whatever facility somebody might actually be in or being discharged from, what they're there to do is they're there to have a conversation with the inpatient providers to talk about the appropriateness of the current care setting and then what kind of plans are going to need to be made after discharge. Now, some facilities have been doing such an awful job of that that the government has decided to start fining them upwards of $100,000 because people are ending back up in inpatient facilities because they just didn't have a sufficient amount of planning as to what kind of support would be in the home if that's where someone's going to be discharged. Are there the resources there to really care for that person? You know, what's going to happen to this person? You can't, you know, unfortunately, sometimes that's done very insufficiently. Now, currently, I think that's something that where Delaware Hospice really shines. So a lot of these meetings that are going on in Silverside are really between the different caregivers to talk about admission planning and then discharge planning. So we are pulling all of those meetings. I mean, you know, even though we're often talking about a patient who is right down the hall and how she is going to be supported in your home when she is discharged there, you know, probably to pass away, we are pulling those meetings out of this facility. However, we do still have certain admission and discharge responsibilities in order to comply with these kind of laws. So I would appreciate not having to put a note on the plan where I have to put up a further wall between the home caregivers who are going to be handling these folks when they get discharged, who are coming to the facility to talk about somebody who needs to be admitted and to facilitate that admission. We're having the group meeting somewhere else, and we can do that. But if I put a note on the plan that could get interpreted as, you know, one of these people who might have been taking care of someone for 6 months in their home can never walk across the threshold and say to the doctor, hey, this woman throws up when she smells chicken soup. Her medication situation is this. You know, she likes her room. It, you know, just to have those communications that you really need to have to make sure that there's proper continuity of care. So I want to get at the concern that you have. But I also want to be very cognizant of what my client's obligations are in terms of making sure they're not pushing people out the door without having, you know, proper discharge planning and that they can do the admissions. So I can get rid of the section of the facility that was committed to that, but, you know, I'm concerned about how what you're asking for could be interpreted.
Well, because, you know, the note does not state that it won't really you're still not saying we will not relocate the headquarters to the site.
Well, we don't have a headquarters at Silverside, and we have a location at Chads Ford. We have a location at Milford. What is primary?
But you know what I'm getting, Kim, please. I'm getting to the care of the billing. That's all. You're right. There is no there's no hospital there. There's no hospice. It's billing. The question that I have is, are you? If you're dead set, no, we're not relocating the 20,000 square foot. We're not putting nothing for outpatient. Why can't we just put a note on a plan that states that we're not relocated its headquarters to this ice, you know, this site? And, you know, the note also states that, you know, it really doesn't say that it will not operate an out-of-patient, you know, network.
It says
here
that it's for an inpatient facility, so I would have to come back with a different plan for it. And, well, I mean, first of all, what you're talking about is ambulatory care, you know, like basically your physician's office, right? So that's not, that would be contradictory to the plan purpose there. And I'll tell you something else. When I turn in the building permit application, I have to turn in an architect certificate and an engineer certificate that both guarantee that the building permit application with the full architecturals is in keeping with this plan. And we don't have a headquarters at Silverside. We just don't. We have a bunch of home care people who have a bunch of meetings, and we have a volunteer board that usually meets by telephone. If you don't want the board meetings there, I guess...
No, that's... Please, we're not going to go there. We talked about the gentleman thing. I didn't ask you for that. That's why you have a conference room of 1,500 square foot.
Right.
That's for that, okay? And I want that there. But I'm just asking, again, we've been through land use with this other particular project, and the notes were put on the plan, and the applicant didn't have a problem. And, I mean, for something that was that huge, that's what I'm just asking you to put a couple notes, and then guess what? It goes away. It goes away. Then my constituents out there can then blast away at me, and I'm saying, here it is. It's on the plan. You don't have to worry about it. I feel comfortable. I get to vote yes. It gets over with. And I just constantly, it seems like you're sidestepping the question.
I'm not sidestepping the question, but once the note is on the plan, it can be enforced as a deed restriction. So that means if it's not extremely clear exactly what my client is being restricted from doing, then I could have a situation where I have an up-and-running patient facility, and it has to shut down because somebody gets an injunction that says, you know, you can't have anybody walk in here who's supposed to be fulfilling their federally and state mandated oversight responsibilities with regard to this facility. So I would like to hear more about exactly what you have in mind.
I'll get you to
get me something. I'm willing to entertain anything, but on the other hand, I can't get my client in a situation.
If you can prove that the state and federal mandate says that and everything on that, that's fine. That's all I'm asking.
The only people who will ever be in this facility are going to have oversight responsibilities for this facility. Oversight responsibilities that the state and the federal government mandate that they have. People with certain certifications and, you know, people with certain titles have to actually be involved. Now, you know, they're not, but it's not any kind of insidious headquarters. And I know that people have been hitting you hard with that, and I'm sympathetic, and I want to help you. I just want to make sure that I don't get my client into a situation where they can't actually run an inpatient facility. That's all.
And I appreciate that. Look, I'll be quite honest with you. I'm not here to tell my people what they want to hear. I'm telling them what they need to know. And I just have to feel very comfortable again to not have to table this, because I want something in writing in front of me that states that the billing is for this usage. It fits on this usage. I mean, to come out September 18th when my aide calls me 11 o'clock European time and tells me, did you get this email? And this is not from you. This is not your fault. But to come out and say, did you, and actually question me. And I said, you have my bank documents. I said, you have everything that I have. And she's going on and said, there is an email that just passed out that there is an agreement signed between the county and between hospice on June 25th. And I know zero about it. That's not your problem. That's not your fault. I'm venting a little bit on that. I just can't believe the sake of God of me. And she questioned me. She says, and I said, name's Stephanie, everybody knows her. I said, my God, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Because we had a meeting on the first Tuesday in May, yourself, Joe, Janet, myself, Dave, and Greg. And basically, this was about over with. And then you just still followed a briefing at the Superior Court and so forth, and we did sidestep it, and then there's an agreement. You have to, with
everything that's been going on, to say I'm once bitten and twice shy is a real understatement here.
Well, I could have fainted when I found out that you had never seen the agreement. So
I appreciate that you didn't give a conference call that you asked for that time of night over there. All right, that's the questions I have now. I'm going to have some more, but look, I want to get this in writing because, and if you're saying you can't do it, then that's my decision what to do after that. Then.
Well, I mean, like I said, I'm glad to entertain anything that I don't think, you know, again, is going to come back to bite my client when they're trying to comply with the laws that they have to follow with regard to oversight. And it's, you know, I can sit down and go through, you know, who has these responsibilities, how often they, you know, tend to have to exercise them. And, you know, just like with the home care people are almost never at Milford. They're almost never there. They're in actually residentially zoned districts in constituents' homes taking care of them. So they really only show up, you know, kind of when people are going in, coming out, or they have like a question of the treating physician who is in the facility.
How was Milford zoned before you built in there?
I don't know. I wasn't involved in that project. Okay. Yeah, it's like it's this odd.
Well, that makes a big difference.
Yeah,
it's compare really, Milford in here.
Oh, sure. No, I mean it's not. You know, there's a completely different situation down there in terms of zoning and whatnot. But it's as far as the facility itself and the natural features behind it and the way that it operates and all of that stuff. What my client sought to do was just really replicate exactly that here. But they learned some lessons about situations where they just didn't have enough room for some things. And, you know.
And I can appreciate that. That's fine. I'm kind of like over that part. But I don't know. I guess I'm just loggerhead about the notes on the plan, I guess. I'm sorry about that.
No, so, I mean,
we'll have to go over this some
more.
No,
that's okay. I mean, this is why we have these meetings, to have these discussions. But, so, you know, we agreed to take the home care people out, and, I mean, the county felt that was an office use. We disagreed. We're over that now. We're bound to this plan contractually. So, you know, from our perspective, we're compliant now. And, I mean, you know, we're compliant as per the agreement. But I just want to make sure that, you know, all your questions about this are adequately answered. We couldn't do what you're describing if we wanted to.
Okay, then.
Councilman Sheldon?
Yeah, that kind of answered that one. And I'll just have to research it a little more, that's all. Well, I mean, when Joe said something about we always had the intentions of closing it down on Silverside, and it just wasn't no answer, I didn't hear anything. It just explodes in me, well, hell, they got to go somewhere. So are they going here? And I'm looking at the bed size from phase one and phase two. I hear that you're, you know, moving stuff around. There's an agreement signed I know nothing about. We've known each other before. I mean, all this takes in consideration. I'm sorry.
That's fine. That's why we have these meetings, to make sure your questions are answered. And actually, it might make sense for you to, it had a big impact on me seeing Silverside, because I don't know if you've ever been in that particular office park before. It's very old. It's very outdated. The space is extremely inefficient. So, you know, in order to facilitate these meetings with these home care people, it actually takes, I mean, if this were a modern, more modern office.
Oh, I'm sure. I know what you're talking about. Look, the thing that I think really should have happened, but it's too late now, is we should have just, I just wish we would have had more input into Pike Creek, from the 52, when you wanted to go, and because it makes perfect, look, as a business person, it makes perfect sense to put everything together. But it's not allowed here. And the rezoning, I just don't want a contract rezoning. I just always thought you should have came with the rezoning from day one. And then the people either liked it, they didn't like it, but it could have been here and it could have been voted on. And we wouldn't have to be going through this inpatient, outpatient lawsuit. Because I hear it too. Look, I donated to hospice before 3 or 4 years ago. You know what? When you're going through lawsuits, you tend to, you know, I believe in Catholicism, and one of the reasons why I went to Italy. Look, our donations are down. It's not because of worshiping. It's because of other things that's happened. And I don't want this to happen here, but it seems like we're spinning wheels, and I feel sorry for hospice, and I just don't want to be the person to keep making sure that the donations don't fly in because of a lawsuit.
We're here over and over again.
So
I appreciate that, but we're pretty unworried about that. I mean, this application has a lot of intense support. We appreciate.
But we have been to court now. let's say hospice hasn't been to court.
Well,
and the Board of Adjustment and everything else.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, we
there's money was involved here.
Well, sure. I mean, we're over it, and we're contractually bound to this particular agreement right now. But I think my client was really intent on especially defending the ability of these caregiver groups to have these meetings, and we just had a different view of that than the county did. So we are where we are. But I also just want to emphasize that this is not the end of the road by any stretch of the imagination on use issues. There's a very big submission that has to come in with the building permit application that is a lot more granular than these plans are, which are really just footprints. And, I've brought other plans just like this here, and I mean, I don't want to out anybody, but I mean, I know what essentially the entire nursing home community in Newcastle County is doing. They're doing lots and lots of stuff. And it is not just administering pain medication to people and, and doing like patient care. So there are a lot of things going on in these other facilities. And, because my client is in and out of a lot of these other facilities, they're aware of them. So they have a...
But that doesn't make it legal now.
Yeah. Well, I would argue that those are valid accessory uses, but the county and I might have a different view of
right.
that. So, I mean, you could say that the okay. large, expansive dining hall at Methodist Country House, which is certainly, it's in an SR district, it's not necessary for anybody's patient care. Their chapel's not necessary for patient care. Their barbershop's not necessary for patient care. They just expand it. And, nobody asked them any questions about their use. So, but we're over it because we're contractually bound to this plan now. However, there are going to be a lot of people looking over our shoulder in the rest of the course of this process, because that's the UDC process.
Thank you.
It is what it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anything else from council?
Before I step down, if I could, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to have all the supporters here for hospice to stand up briefly.
Look, we would support him. Look, we're all supportive of hospice. There's not one person. You guys, I know Jay is. So, I mean, that's the whole room.
Okay. Is there anything from our council? Councilwoman?
Thank you. I haven't said much during all of this, and I'm going to get my 2 cents in here. I come at the issue of death in two ways. One is pastorally and what I would do and what I would want for a family whose member is dying. And I'm very supportive of the hospice concept. But when I walk into this room, this is about zoning. And I am just clueless as to why this has gone on and on and on and on. And quite frankly, this whole thing could have been resolved with a request for rezoning. And I am just utterly amazed at what I have been through on this particular, and what I've seen on this. And there are no comments needed.
Well, Councilwoman Diller,
I said there are no comments needed because I am so furious about this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anything else from council? Councilman Sheldon, would you want our counselor to get up and say anything? Or
I know
you asked in the beginning.
Questions? Yes. Yes, sir.
Okay, who would you like? Do you like our counselor, or do you like the county?
I want either Greg or
both
and
here.
Dave Culver, I guess.
All three are here.
Take your
pick.
Everybody comes up.
All right. Ladies first.
At least, for all men.
Now, you got
oh, I got, counsel. I got my own counsel, but I'm fine. She can stay in the back. She's... thanks for stepping up. I guess you'll have to go forward with this, naming who you are. But am I wrong, or am I looking at this, you know, with this note on the plan? Like I said, I just got it stuck in my call. And we've all stood up and supported hospice. There's not one person has, is against hospice. But, I mean, when we signed over, why can't I... Can they put a note on the plan? I realize she, Ms. Hoffman, noted it out and so forth. But a note's on the plan and so forth. Wrong page, excuse me. But it's on there. I saw it. But is that sufficient? And why can't we do more than what we did with Barley Mill? Or what the other applicants did? And I hate to keep bringing up another applicant. It could be any applicant. Okay, but which is applicant A, was willing to do that, and why can't we do this? I don't want to send it back to the planning board. I don't do none of that. I want this over with before the election. I really do. Okay, somebody else is sitting here, and they get a different idea. I want this done. Can you explain to me why we can't ask that? I guess it's because of the planning board. But why do you think that the applicant doesn't want to do it, and I guess that's because it just seems like it's sidestepping the question.
Greg Wilson, County Attorney. Let me step back just for a moment and maybe state the obvious, but there's some people in the room that probably don't even understand what we're arguing about. This is a residential area. It's residentially zoned, so you're permitted to do some exceptions to a residential house. One is an institution. An institution is defined as where the residents live in an institutional environment and are generally under the care or control of staff. So that's one of the exceptions. What you can't do is build an office building. So that's the crux of what the discussion is. If you do a rezoning, you may be able to rezone it and build an office building. But absent a rezoning, we're dealing with a residential use. You could also build an institution, as I said, and you can use, and that institution can contain accessory uses, which is defined by the Supreme Court, or the Superior Court in a recent opinion on hospice. So what you're asking is, can we put a note on the plan? Yes, there is a note on the plan, and Ms. Hoffman read it, and it says, it is appellant's intent to provide for the construction of a single-story, 24-bed, 59,978 gross square footage, inpatient hospice facility on the property. So that is the note that's on the plan. Now, you've asked, can we put another note on the plan, but we don't know what that note
they
is.
Did not operate an outpatient plan. Now.
Well, all right. And
from the facility also. That's what I'm asking.
Generally, when you put a note on the plan, you're asking somebody to restrict what they are allowed to do.
Right.
So in other words, I can do something in a particular zoning, and we agree that we're going to put a note on the plan that's going to forever bind that property that you can't do something that normally you're allowed to do.
Correct.
The situation we have here is they're only allowed to do what they're allowed to do, which is what it says here. So you're asking them to put an additional note on the plan that says, and we're not clear exactly what the note would say, but you're asking them to basically say they wouldn't violate the law.
Maybe you can do that. I'm putting it in layman's terms. Again, to not operate an outpatient care facility from here.
But they're not permitted to do that. So essentially, we could put a lot of things on the plan. We could say you can't operate an outpatient facility. We could say you can't put a nuclear power plant there. It's redundant to some extent. So now I realize the devil is always in the details, and there may be further disputes as we go along as to whether they're running an institution or a non-institutional facility or whether there's office. So there's room for
But we just heard Ms. Hoffman say that she's been at different organizations and said they're doing this and they're doing that and they've seen this and that. Why can't I just ask so it's done and over with? Why can't counsel